The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to Ask an Atheist, where opinion follows reason. My name is Sam, and with me today is Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
And Rich.
Good to be here.
Before we get started, I want to remind people that apparently last week was World Homeopathy Awareness Week. And we at Ask an Atheist would like to remind you that there is no scientific evidence that homeopathy works. There's your awareness. Moving on, did you know, you guys, that it's now 34 days before the end of the world, according to Family Radio?
34 days? That's almost a month.
That's almost a month. A little more than a month. I guess a baker's month, 34 days. Yeah, because you're such a good customer.
Right.
And we have a big announcement. We're going to kind of skip the emails about the about this, our We Can't Know project, and tell you about sort of the culmination of that project. And we would like to announce, on Saturday, May 21st, 2011, sometime in the evening, I believe 8 p.m., we will be having live music at Dorky's Barcade at 9th and Pacific in Tacoma. We will be featuring the bands Bone Poets Orchestra, Lena Lou, Three Ninjas, and a jam session led by Ask an Atheist Chad Cassidy. And I love jamming and sort of improvisational music. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
So
if you're an atheist and you're a musician, you're going to want to come by and get a chance to participate and see how things go. Dorky's Barcade is pretty cool. We started kind of going there in the last couple weeks. And in fact, we're actually going to be meeting there after the show tonight. And
that's what's great about the place is, and not only does it have really good food, but there are a lot of standing arcade game stuff that I haven't seen in like 12 years.
Yeah.
We were actually playing the Ninja Turtles arcade game last night.
That was
a flashback.
We absolutely were. I haven't played that since the KOA in Marengo, Illinois, roughly the 90s.
Oh, I remember arcades at KOAs. That's...
So watch the website for specific information. There will be a cover. There will be beer, we're told, by the time they're applying for their liquor license right now. But stick around. It's going to be a great time. We're going to be working with people who are doing similar parties across the country. We're going to finally unveil the photo mosaic that we have of people taking pictures of signs. It's going to be a fun event. So, and we're also going to be working with Ask an Atheist and some of their ideas for the countdown to backpedaling. And watch the final moments of the countdown to backpedaling in North America. If the end of the world doesn't occur by the time you hit the Pacific time zone, chances are the end of the world isn't occurring.
And just like a presidential election, nobody cares what happens in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Right.
So, moving on. Last week, another event also happened last week. I believe it was National Ask an Atheist Day.
Yeah, I'd like to say that this is something about us, but unfortunately it's not. But it has the same sort of goal as we do, which is atheists putting themselves out there to the public, making themselves available to people to correct a lot of misconceptions about us.
Right. a lot of misconceptions about us. It's really... it was sort of an internet meme, started out on forums and stuff like that. I know there's other radio shows that have had segments about Ask an Atheist.
Tons of college organizations, whether it's Secular Coalition, or what's it called, the Secular Student Union, Secular Student Alliance, they've been putting out tables at different, basically meeting areas at universities, putting themselves out there saying, you know, hey, I'm an atheist, there's a lot of misconceptions, why not open a dialogue with us? See what we have to say, challenge us about our beliefs, ask us about our beliefs, let's have a conversation.
We'd like to remind you that this Ask an Atheist is a call-in show, so if you'd like to talk to us, you can give us a call at 253-584-1480. And we have some news this week. We're actually going to open with some news, and all of the news we've got stems from the World Ask an Atheist Week. And you've got a story for us, Rich?
Absolutely. This one happened, it's from the Daily Herald. At least one parent... Count them.
At least one.
At least one parent was upset Wednesday when a group of students set up shop in Larkin High School cafeteria to talk about atheism. The occasion was Ask an Atheist Day, a national event that aims to dispel stereotypes from atheists and promote dialogue between believers and non-believers. John Tuin, the principal of Elgin School, said he allowed a group of atheist students from Larkin to set up a table in a cafeteria during two lunch periods. Mm-hmm. He said kids could come to the table, ask them questions. Said students didn't have to go up and talk. It wasn't like a group came to do a presentation. They just were there. But one parent.
That's all it takes, and there's always one of those.
Ones of parents.
One parent said the school went too far. They were here to talk about atheism. Her name is Siobhan Standback of Elgin. That's totally unacceptable to me. I'm a Christian woman. I believe in God. I believe in heaven and hell.
Then get a table.
Yeah.
Exactly. Get your own
get a table.
The principal, yeah, you're totally free to do that.
This is pure non-establishment clause as far as I'm concerned.
One parent. That's a news story, right?
And it was reported by the Herald, right? It was.
This is a city
Daily
paper.
Herald, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually a regional paper in the Chicago area, and this is personally interesting to me because I went to Larkin High School back in the 90s to give you sort of an age there, and we were talking about it, and I would never have thought that something like this could happen at Larkin.
And so your alma mater is now setting the standard
absolutely.
For free speech and atheism in America.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Like I said, this is a non-establishment thing. If they can talk, if they can have prayer in school but not directed prayer, then atheists should be able to sit down and talk.
Sure,
student-led prayer, something away, something non-disruptive, or after-school clubs, things like that. Those are always allowed. And again, this isn't them going classroom to classroom, following other students around, hitting them with atheism, harassing people. Not that at all. You're just putting yourself out there, setting up a little sign saying, "Hey, I'm over here, and if you want to have this dialogue, you can choose to have it with me."
Absolutely.
And Christians are free to do the same thing. If they want to tell people about their good buddy Jesus, they can put up a table in the cafeteria, same as the atheist did, and open a dialogue.
And the principal of the school said exactly that. So I'm not going to say go Royals because that's never been my style, but hooray Larkin High School for taking point on that.
I just the media angle here, their lead statement, at least one parent was upset. Why did they take that lead? I mean, I know the answer to that. I've worked in media long enough. I know the answer, but it's just amazing to me to see this just they're trying to make a controversy where one does not exist, clearly.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think the fact that they said at least one and says to me that all they could find to talk about it was one.
Was one.
And they just said, well, there's probably more than one. So at least one. If there were two, they'd say a couple.
Do you think it might be some reporter going, you know, I bet I know there's somebody in Elgin who might not like this. Let's give them a call. I mean,
probably so.
It's,
yeah.
It's possible. That's all it really
takes.
Or
the reporter, if the reporter even went to the school, probably walked around until they found a parent who was upset.
Right,
I mean,
that's
your money shot, so you look for it. And you ask 28 people, and one of them says, well, I don't know, and then that's your soundbite.
But how is this in the newspaper? At least one parent is upset by, and then dot, dot, dot. You could put anything there, because band practice was canceled, and they had to pick up their son early.
Yeah, if Dominic has, like, a bad batch of mangoes, and somebody complains, it doesn't get in the newspaper where it said one person disliked the produce at Dominic's, the grocery store.
At least one person was upset because they did not make the chess team.
But it's the idea of atheism as controversy. It's the view of new atheism as because we have opinions, we are somehow not as cool as everybody else and we're a target for heat.
And the because she's a Christian, she believes in God.
Right.
And
of course.
The double standard. How innocuous can you be and not be offensive? The answer is there is no so innocuous, so harmless thing that an atheist can do publicly, including saying, hey, I exist.
Yeah. Now, if you think this was less than innocuous and you'd like to explain to us why, you can give us a call at 253-584-1480. And we have another story, which has a slightly less positive outcome.
Well, this is something that actually is also Ask an Atheist. Like you said, this is an event that was happening all over the country. And this was the thing that happened at Virginia Tech, where the atheist organization there put up in the, I guess, what would you call that? whatever the local meeting area. It's like a Red Square was the equivalent in,
yeah,
in
like,
UW.
I mean, it was called the Hub at ASU. It was called the Commons at Bradley. Or
yeah, whatever the large common area is. Yeah. The atheist organization there put up a table, and something had happened. It wasn't – this was also a ones of people, but they did something far more than just get upset. Virginia Tech police were called to the drill field Wednesday afternoon following a report of a student stabbing his own hand with a pen. Alexander Huppert, a freshman, a university studies major, then assaulted an officer who approached to check his welfare, according to the police press release. After a short struggle with the officer, several witnesses say he was taken into custody. The incident took place near a table promoting the local version of Ask an Atheist Day. A student group of freethinkers at Virginia Tech sponsored the table. Witnesses say Huppert stood near the table for nearly an hour. Approaching the table, Huppert borrowed a pen and drew a circle with a cross inside it on the back of his hand. Nicole Schrand, a senior psychology major, then said that Huppert then asked the students at the table to stab him in the cross with the pen to, quote, prove that God exists.
This, if you've ever tabled at a university, which I have, you know, sometimes there's some guy floating around around the hub or something who just looks a bit shifty and
you get a lot of this strange in Seattle, because I think our natural inclination in Seattle is passive aggression.
Yeah, and you're always sort of afraid that that guy might be there for you and might be there to do something weird. This is a little paranoia in the back of your head. And in this case, it actually panned out and it got a little scary.
Yeah, usually it's somebody who just wants to make sure you see them scowling at you. And that's as far as it usually goes. But the fact is that he wanted them to stab him. They didn't, so he took it into his own hand. stabbed himself repeatedly. I remember them. One student saying so far as saying that if this had not been such a cheap pen, they could have seen it going entirely through his hand.
Ouch.
The real question, I mean, aside from the fact that this doesn't prove God, it just proves that you're probably mentally ill.
I don't know. What do you think, Rich? Was he trying to medically be like Jesus here? Or?
You know, I'm having a hard time getting inside his head, which means he's crazier than I am. what I'm thinking here is, the only angle I can see is he's thinking, if I have this much devotion to something, that clearly proves it exists.
So suicide bombers are onto something.
It, you know, the whole argument is just kind of moot. It doesn't prove anything. You can be devoted to anything. I know people who are devoted to animes and love it and watch it. And just because they're devoted to it doesn't mean these characters exist.
As hard as they might wish that they were.
Exactly. And it you can't – just the fact that, okay, he may have proved his devotion, but he didn't prove what he's devoted to exists. That's right. A whole other argument. And
he's proved his belief in it, but not
exactly.
The fact that his belief is based on anything.
Absolutely.
That this is going to comes back to something that I find very disconcerting about religion, which is that it becomes a really effective shield against mental illness. I mean – what I'm saying is that clearly this guy was mentally ill, but until the moment that he stabbed himself, there's really nothing separating his behavior from any other, I guess you could say, zealous believer.
Sure. Yeah.
That somebody could not be mentally ill, and there's a thing where you sort of accept that there are some people who may not be mentally ill, but they're really religious, who when they get into an argument and they hear something they consider blasphemous, they start shaking and crying and screaming and start saying that they hear voices, help me Jesus, that sort of stuff. And the thing with religion is that those belief systems that they've latched this mental illness onto are socially accepted, where if he thought that Batman was talking to him, we'd immediately know. So how do you even – this isn't me throwing it out there as all religious people are crazy. I'm clearly not saying that. What I'm saying is that it obscures warning signs.
The line blurs a little bit.
Yeah.
I remember a story I was told the last time I was tabling, since we're in that part of my life, of somebody who was a big fan of that one girl band, the Spice Girls. And she was an ultra fan, and everybody was absolutely freaking out about it. And they thought, like, maybe she was a little over the top and liked it too much. And it was confirmed when she carved Spice Girls into her forearm. But the thing is that it was easy for them to kind of figure out that there might be a problem there, and so they were ready when it happened. With religion, the lines blur a little
right.
bit because, and we've talked about this a bit
sure.
on the show, where where when is it actual mental illness, and when is it especially when you have glossolalia and things like that?
Exactly,
when is it just a sign of devotion?
And it's difficult to draw that line, because I was one of those who taught that unless you could speak in tongues, the glossolalia thing, you weren't saved. So it was expected of every member in the congregation to have this experience. So you effectively are either lying about what you're doing, or you drive your subconscious to a place that it complies with what your conscious mind wants you to do.
Right.
And you wind up babbling and not realizing that you're not actually receiving that message from God. And I think by definition, that's got to be pretty close to mental illness.
Yeah. I kind of wonder, is sort of implementationally, and this is just a question I've had, which I've never gotten an answer for, is the speaking in tongues thing, is it similar to sort of the Buddhist meditational mantra, where it basically turns into a null phrase, which gets your mind receptive to whatever you're doing on a religious basis? Or?
Not really. It really kind of comes from the ecstasy of the moment.
Okay.
It comes from a total frenzy.
Getting caught up in the emotions of it?
Yes. And the way to make it happen is to get the entire building rocking.
Mm-hmm.
Get the place shaking. Get everything moving. And that frenetic environment, the energy of it, it gets easy to lose yourself in that. And that's where you let that happen.
So the speaking in tongues tended to be loud and screaming.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so it was basically creating a rock concert atmosphere.
Exactly. And in fact, we would take that and turn it the other way and say, what we've got here tonight is exactly what the people on Saturday night had at the rock concert, but we've got the real thing and they've got the counterfeit.
Now, do you think that – do you really think it was
but
like –
But in both cases, you have incomprehensible lyrics. Sometimes.
Exactly.
We'll be talking about that a little later. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And one more question is, do you think the yelling and screaming and the loud, raucous preaching seminars, things like that, does that have a history longer than the rock concerts? Or do you think the rock concerts sort of created that?
I know where the noise came from in the churches. Before you had sound systems, and once you got into the churches that would respond back, you had to get loud to be over them, and then the crowd would get louder, and then you're getting louder to be heard over the crowd, and then you get 1,000 watts of audio mixed into that, and it gets painful, and everybody can feel it. And we can talk volume. I had a place marked on a soundboard at a church, and it didn't matter what the preacher was saying. I could bump it up, and when it would start hitting that, the place would start rocking.
Wow.
Made no difference.
All right. Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. See you in a minute.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com, where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an integral part of your business. But that's not all. We can set you up with VoIP, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to helping your business succeed through and with technology. At Tacoma Telematics, we are committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And we got one more news story we'll get into, and that takes us right into our topic. And this comes to us from The Telegraph, and it's Surge in Satanism sparks rise in demand for exorcists, says Catholic Church.
Surge in Satanism?
Surge in Satanism.
Oh, no.
The web has made it easier than ever before to access information on devil worshipping and the occult, experts said. Exorcism is the subject of a six-day conference being held this week at the Regina Apostolorum Pontifical University in Rome. Which is under the Vatican's authority. The internet makes it much easier than in the past to find information about Satanism, says Carlo Clamati, a member of the universe who specializes in dangers posed to young people by Satanism.
Is that an actual position at the school? Is it a department?
Yeah, I wonder.
Dangers from Satanism?
Dangers, well, it is the Catholic Church. It is the Vatican, so they might actually spend a non-trivial portion of their time figuring out what Satan's up to.
So he's like a +5 cleric then? And
I was going to say it's the Pope and friends in their danger room waiting for Satan to appear somewhere on Earth so they can hop in the spaceship and go attack. There's been a revival, says Gabrielle Nani, a former exorcist and another speaker at the course. In theory, any priest can perform an exorcism, a rite involving prayers to drive the devil out of the person said to be possessed. But Vatican officials said 3 years ago that parish priests should call in professional exorcists if they suspect one of their parishioners needs purging of evil. Who are you going to call?
The exorcist.
Exactly. And that brings us to today's topic. This is not the first time people have been concerned about Satanism. Back in the 1980s, there was a panic, and it was called the Satanic. People have called it the Satanic Panic. People have called it the
Satanic Panic.
The Satanic Panic. If you have a weird pronunciation of the word, people have called it the Satanic Ritual Abuse Scare, and that's kind of what we're talking to today. And it's the first episode in a series of episodes we're doing called "Where's the Harm." And the essential idea behind "Where's the Harm" is a lot of people come up to us as atheists and say that we have, you know, religious people have their weird ideas, but they're otherwise harmless. So why
harp on it?
Why harp on it? Why talk about it? Why go after them? And, well, this is one of the reasons why. Harmless ideas, while they're in their heads, occasionally turn into harmful actions.
Yeah, and I think we did an example of this sort of thing earlier when we talked about anti-vaxxers, that somebody can have the best intentions in the world, that they really think that they're saving people, and do demonstrable harm.
Right. Go ahead.
I think that what you create by saying that there is this rise in satanic activity is, number one, it's unverifiable. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody has seen a coven, has seen human sacrifice, I'll even take a cat sacrifice. If you've seen that, call us. The number is 584-1480. Give us a call. I want to talk to you about that because, number one, I don't believe it's actually happening. I believe that it is a manufactured thing because they've got something to sell. Yeah. If you've got something to sell, you've got to create a demand. It's just like deodorant. You know what? They sell you on your fear that you stink. That's why we buy deodorant. We don't buy deodorant because it's some great product. We buy it out of fear.
Yeah.
And I think the same thing is happening here is they're selling something based on fear and the fear of the devil.
I do like the fact that they are actually playing a supply and demand argument in this article that, hey, Satanism is up, so we got to up the exorcism. I find that really funny because where is this rise in Satanism? I'm not seeing it. I mean, you can point to things like there's an atheist movement and there's billboards and bus ads and there's books coming out. Where is the Satanist equivalent?
Yeah. And it should be said, we're not actually talking about the extant and actually real Church of Satan.
Right.
That it's an interesting organization that their new headquarters is like in Hell's Kitchen, New York. Ha 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 ha.
Right.
which we've kind of described as dinner theater atheism.
Yeah, it a lot of ways. You look at what the modern Church of Satan, the Anton LaVey style Satanist. This is essentially an atheist group that takes kind of a contrarian, a little bit of a childish, kind of hedonistic philosophy, and then goes to Hot Topic and dresses up like a Flash Gordon bad guy. it's kind of silly, but these aren't actual devil worshippers. And what this scare is about is devil worshippers. We're talking like bad guys from Conan the Barbarian, you know, cult leaders, like the guy in Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom ripping children's hearts out, that kind of stuff. That's who they are saying are on the rise.
Yeah, yeah. And the interesting thing about the Satanic Panic movement is it has its starts basically in the 60s with the sort of the return of a counterculture and stuff like that after World War II. And the whole Satanic Panic actually, it's believed, has a source with a single person called Mike Warnke. And Mike Warnke released a book in 1973 called The Satan Seller, discussing his mid to late 1960s path of being orphaned, going to college, growing his hair out, and becoming a hippie, which took him through alcohol, which, according to the book, took him through alcoholism to drug abuse and then becoming a Satanist, rising so high in the hierarchy of this underground satanic movement that he was high priest to over 1,500 Satanists in three cities, which to me sounds a little bit like he owned a chain of dry cleaners. You know?
Yeah. Operated on the megachurch concept.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not seeing any Mick Satan's franchise temples out there or anything like that.
I'm not seeing any Satanists out there.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. And he established a lot of the things that people associate popularly with Satan. The rites, the bloodletting, the sacrifices, and were all described in this book, combined with some, and then this combined with some of the theatrics that the bona fide but harmless Church of Satan folks were doing, and it formed the basis of a ritualistic murder and sexual abuse concepts that people have been talking about to this day.
Yeah. And you throw in that Alice Cooper during that time.
Yeah.
In 1975, The Exorcist came out. This was all pushing towards something.
Black Sabbath, if I might add.
Right.
I love Black Sabbath. Needless to say, the entire story of Mike Warnke is a fabrication. In 1993, the Christian magazine Cornerstone published an in-depth debunking of the Warnke story, including an alternative story showing Warnke to be a relatively normal college student and kind of a square, I'm quoting, who participated in the San Bernardino Valley College's Campus Crusade for Christ. So while he was apparently franchising the satanic movement, he was in the Campus Crusade for Christ. What awesome cover.
Yeah.
And there's a great quote, and this comes from Diana Kradlich, who was in the story. She was one of Mike Warnke's friends. And she said, after he got famous, I always wanted to write him a letter saying, Mike, remember me? The one you gave the silver cross to when were you able to have this coven of over 1,500 people? Don't you remember about the most exciting thing we used to do was playing croquet in Greg's backyard? In The Satan Seller, Mike never mentions croquet. He was too busy becoming a teenage alcoholic. I just love that. And that was the story. The story in Cornerstone paints Warnke as a teller of tall tales who spun this ability into several things, from the usual self-aggrandizement seen in religious iconoclasts. For example, one story is that he actually did serve in the Navy and was in Vietnam and did receive the Purple Heart. However, the story, as we're used to seeing from religious iconoclasm, was amped up from something relatively minor to that he's like injured five times in the field.
Pretty soon he's Rambo, right?
Right, right, right. And he was in the theater for 6 months and then was released on conscientious objector status to start his ministry.
Not the satanic ministry.
No, 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 no.
I think if you sacrifice a cat, you lose your conscientious objector status.
I think so. And then he used this reputation as an ex-Satanist that he developed as a tall tale to go on a world speaking tour and eventually led to a series of albums that made him the America's number one Christian comedian. So,
is there a lot of competition in that?
No. Christian comedy is pathetic.
We are talking about intentional Christian comedy. We're not talking about the stuff that Pat Robertson does.
No, we're not talking about Polaw type stuff.
Yeah.
And then this Cornerstone expose happened in 1991. And Wernicke's original ministry evaporated overnight. But he had over almost 20 years of experience traveling the country telling people about Satanism. And he managed to get the attention of Oprah Winfrey, Geraldo Rivera, Pat Robertson, and James Dobson of Focus on the Family, who later on formed part of the ideological backbone of the moral majority. And while we don't often make political statements on Ask an Atheist, I think we can safely say that the moral majority, not that great of an idea. It was Christian ideology basically coming into the fore once again on the level of federal government.
Well, it was a group openly pushing for sort of a theocratic apocalyptic style of government, that they were very much not just politicians who happen to be Christians. They were Christian politicians.
Yeah.
And pushing that line hard, that this is the culture warrior that rages to this day in a lot of primaries and general elections. People screaming about this or that issue, you know, because of Jesus.
This is Ask an Atheist, and we're talking about satanic panic. Are you a Satanist? Have you met a Satanist? Do you care about Satanism? Give us a call, 253-584-1480. Rich, did this really intersect your ministry when you were doing that at all? Or?
It absolutely did. I actually conducted a number of exorcisms. That was one of the things that, as a pastor, and being Pentecostal, I was one of those that really didn't like the whole warfare thing, but occasionally you get people that come in and they're all into the warfare, and especially when you have a traveling evangelist or somebody and they preach that stuff. You know, it's amazing. I could go for months and never have anything like that because I didn't talk about it, but someone starts talking about it, then it starts happening, you know?
Right.
And people basically confirmed what it was that they were believed was expected of them. And there are people that came to me that had demons, and it was my responsibility to cast those demons out. And they would do exactly what they thought they were supposed to do. If they had seen The Exorcist, they'd try to twist their head around, you know? It's Ow. Just amazing how they complied to – and, of course, I didn't see this at the time, but they complied to what they thought possession was supposed to be. When you deliver them of their demon, some people – you know, a lot of people just don't know what you're supposed to do when you're done with it. Right. You know, okay, it's gone. What do I do? So, you know, they would just be happy and hug everybody. Others had the idea that they had to vomit something out for the demon to come out. So that's when you have to go get a trash can and, you know, hopefully they hit.
Or some sawdust.
Yeah, it's just disturbing.
I can't say – the idea of exorcism has never really caught my attention. I've never been a big fan of the movie. But now that I know someone who's done this, I'm kind of fascinated by the minutia of it. Would it just come up and smack him with a Bible or what?
Depending on the circumstances, if it happened in a service, you kind of cover the area with people who are praying and stuff. So you've got kind of a wall between what's going on up here and what everybody else can really see.
Like a Gallagher concert.
So you establish a perimeter defense.
Exactly. Okay. And then you deal one-on-one with the person, with the exorcist, which would have been me. We didn't call it exorcist. That's just what pastors do.
Right.
You know, and you would recite your things that you would say all off the cuff, all ad-libbed, all in the name of Jesus. And sometimes the person with the demon would want to argue with you and say things. And
That's what I was going to ask is you said that they do what's sort of expected of them. They actually did the gravelly voice like, evil pastor, you'll never get rid of me.
One guy crawled on the floor because he said that he was a serpent, a snake, and he tried to do the crawling on his belly with his hands, you know, arms down to his side.
Wow.
Kind of like the worm, only sideways.
Did they have character sheets? I mean, was this role-playing?
It's what they thought they were supposed to do. And, yeah, I guess in a way it was role-playing. Sadly, I was playing the role, too, because I was doing what I thought I was supposed to do. And it's based on the fact that – and I don't want to be standing in judgment of those people now because I was right there with them doing the same thing.
Right.
You know, I didn't go and say, you have a demon, we have to cast it out. But when they came to me, obviously, you know, frothing at the mouth and crawling on the floor, I'm like, okay, this has got to be what that is.
On a base level, you saw someone in trouble and you used what tools you had to rid them of that trouble.
Exactly.
And you all were, you know, there was a little bit of weirdness going on there mentally, but you were all, you know, you were all under kind of under that spell as a group.
Exactly. And I was 100% effective at it. Mm. So for no other reason, I mean, I must have been a good one because they all had happy endings. The person either barfed it out or just got happy at the end and spoke in tongues. And
yeah.
So if you didn't barf it out, do you really need a pastor? Can you just use an Ipecac?
Well, you know, it's not just barfing. It's what you're barfing
right.
that matters. So
yeah, you get a lot of pea soup in there. And you're
yeah, it's really, you know.
Well, this was going on in the churches. Mm-hmm. And this was going on, and Wernicke was touring the country in the 70s and 80s. When, again, the moral majority and focus on the family were sort of at their apex. And so basically people who really believed this were suddenly in control of policy. And when these harmless, otherwise harmless thoughts, I mean, it sounds weird, it's interesting, but for my life, it's otherwise harmless. It doesn't really affect me. But eventually, when these people become policymakers, it starts to affect us. And
right.
In one case, there was many educators know about this because it was one of the show trials that basically increased scrutiny on educators, and that was the McMartin Daycare Trial. And it was one of the more memorable things that ever happened in courts. And it was at a trial of the 1980s, and it lasted from 1984 to 1990 and cost over $15 million, which to this day remains one of the most expensive criminal trials in United States history. And while the accused spent over 5 years in prison, nobody was ever convicted of a crime. And this was a case where there was abuse, where there was a proposed abuse. Judy Johnson, who was the first person to lay claim of abuse at the McMartin daycare, she was the mother of a child enrolled at the daycare, and she accused people of drilling children under their arms, drilling
like a power drill.
Yeah, like a power drill.
Wow.
That's going to leave a mark, though. You're going to actually see that.
Yeah, but there was no evidence of that, of flying through the air and other witchcraft-based stuff.
Okay, that goes beyond the usual sex abuse scandals.
Yeah, and in response, the local police department informed by Wernicke's style, Wernicke's basically tours, because he actually helped local police as well, they sent out a form letter naming people in the investigation to everyone who went to that school and seeing if anybody else had been molested. And in any other context, this would have been seen as incredibly libelous.
But I'm going to guess that the response was that everybody saw Goody Proctor with the devil?
Basically.
Oh.
Incidentally, Judy Johnson was hospitalized for paranoid schizophrenia and alcoholism and died in 1986. So the source of this was from illness. Frankly, this case is a great example of using suggestion techniques on children to have memories of events that did not occur. Interviews with children were held in an incredibly suggestive and coercive manner, leading to incredible allegations. For example, one of the most, the weirdest one, and the one that continues as a conspiracy theory to this day, is that the abuse occurred underground, and that children would be flushed in tunnels underground, and children would be flushed in toilets, where they would be abused underground, and they would pop up back through the toilet, where they would be cleaned of any evidence of abuse.
You're talking about an actual toilet you flushed down. You're actually flushing to the toilet to an underground place where you're tortured.
A child,
yeah.
Not, yeah, okay. A child.
Yeah.
Even a child, though, I don't think the pipes are that...
It gets
exactly
better.
What I'm saying.
They continued the flying witches. They traveled in a hot air balloon. All the usual Mike Wernicke satanic panic stuff. And my favorite...
They've traveled in a hot air balloon underground?
Yeah. I'm not really certain. One of the abusers was identified as actor Chuck Norris.
Oh. Chuck Norris.
I wonder if that puts Huckabee in this conspiracy. But it went all the way to 1990. Geraldo had a special on Satanism where one of the parents of the children claimed that fully one-third of the school system had been molested, over 1,000 children. You think that would leave some sort of evidence other than just...
It would leave a lot of evidence.
Yeah, and that requires... I hate to say this, but that level of abuse requires infrastructure. This would be incredibly easy to catch.
Yeah, there's a systemic conspiracy there at that point, that something can't be that big. And this is one of the big things with conspiracy theories, is that the larger it gets, the more people that have to be in on it to make this thing actually go off without a charge. And a lot of the time it's so big that there are actually more conspirators than there are victims, and that's when it gets ridiculous.
Absolutely. This is Ask an Atheist. We're talking about the Satanic Panic. You can give us a call at 253-584-1480. See you in a minute.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an integral part of your business. But that's not all. We can set you up with VoIP, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to helping your business succeed through and with technology. At Tacoma Telematics, we are committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And wrapping up my topic, which we're talking about the McMartin daycare trial, this continued on, and there were conspiracy theories. And then finally in 2005, one of the children spoke up and said,
never, at this point as an adult.
As an adult. Never did anyone do anything to me. I never saw them doing anything. I said a lot of things that didn't happen. I lied. Anytime I would give them an answer that they didn't like, they would ask again and encourage me to give them an answer they were looking for. I felt uncomfortable and a little ashamed that I was being dishonest. But at the same time, being the type of person I was, whatever my parents wanted me to do, I would do. The media generally holds children as guileless, uncorrupted, and therefore fully believable. But children, as any parent can tell you, do lie. And when prompted by adults in authority who are there to ostensibly help them, will lie under circumstances just like these.
Sure.
This is suggestion. This is a known psychological phenomenon.
And this is something we talked about a couple weeks ago with that Heaven Is So Real book, where people also use their children as sort of a theological human shield. That if your kid is saying it, it creates this pressure on any skeptic to remain quiet. Otherwise, it sounds like you're being mean to a child or being a bully in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the person themselves, the person who's feeding them this, can hide behind their kid and try to avoid the sort of skepticism or pointed questions that someone else might end up taking. So I think it's a really cowardly thing. And it's very clear that these people in the satanic trial were really led along by their parents and their need to sort of please an adult figure.
Absolutely. So one of the things I wanted to ask you, Rich, is that the thing about this McMartin daycare trial is that the media coverage of it, from Geraldo to newspapers, was always on the side of the parents.
It's going to be that way. And, you know, media try as we do to be straight down the middle, bottom line is there's also advertising involved. You're selling a product.
Mm-hmm.
If newspaper A makes it spectacular and newspaper B does not, newspaper A gets the readers, newspaper A gets the advertisers.
If right. It bleeds, it leads.
Yeah. And that just kind of builds into the whole situation. This is a spectacular story. You've got kids saying they were abused in satanic rituals. That pulls on every parent. And if you don't throw this stuff out there, if you're the one, like Mike said earlier, saying, let's be skeptical towards this. Did this really happen? They're not going to read your product or buy your product, and you're not going to sell your ads. So it kind of is driven by that particular thing. Back during this time in the late 80s, I was the news editor at a newspaper in East Texas, and we had a situation where we get a call from out of the blue. Someone says the sheriff's department is right now looking at an abandoned house that has a pentagram, and there's obviously a coven operating out of this home. So we send a photographer, take pictures. You've got the pentagram drawn on the floor and things scattered around. And then a few weeks later, it happens again at another place, and a few weeks later at another place. And this went on through the better part of that summer, kind of died down when all the kids went back to school. What we found out later and never really did a story on was we totally were pwned. It was a group of high school students who said, hey, let's see if we can. And so they draw it up the way they're supposed to. And one of them got their parent to call the police and say, hey, look what our kids found. And the kids were never associated with it. But the media, the newspapers, the radio stations in that area totally ran with it. There is this cult out there that is sacrificing animals and It also happened to coincide with a kidnapping that had taken place, and a young girl, I want to say 10, 11, 12 years old, was kidnapped, and to the best of my knowledge, never was found. But everyone was just certain she was sacrificed during this thing, and it was just a huge blown-out thing that in reality was just some high school kids playing a prank, yeah, and their parents going along with it. And but it was sensational. It had all of the making of a just something you grab the paper and read, mm-hmm, and people did.
Right.
I was actually talking to one of our producers, Beth, on the phone this morning, and we were talking a bit about the Satanic Panic. And a point she had made, and this is one I really like, is she compared it to Orson Welles' radio production of The War of the Worlds, where he did a radio production that was basically made to look like a news broadcast, that it would have some music for a little while, then it would cut in with news that the Martians were attacking and killing people,
yeah,
that we were actually having an alien invasion. This caused a lot of panic, a lot of, you know, phone calls into the station, people were freaking out. And like this, it's about an event that doesn't happen. Again, these kind of scares happen where it's like, oh, so-and-so is a terrorist, there are terrorists among us, there's communists among us. A lot of the weird reactions to atheists being more vocal and more visible. But atheists are something we can point to. It's like, hey, they're writing books, they're giving lectures and stuff like that. Communists exist, they had a country.
Yeah.
Terrorists exist, they attack things. There is no it that we're blowing out of proportion. We're just manufacturing it out of thin air with, yeah, the Satanism thing. And like the War of the Worlds, people are getting really worked up, and they take these little circumstantial things like, oh, the kidnapped kid, and they start in this graffiti, and then they start just assuming things. And remember, Occam's Razor is not just about the simplest answer. It's about the answer that has the least number of assumptions. And they are just pulling, like, oh, we can't find the body, therefore it must have been sacrificed. We've never found any ashes. We're not finding any remains. We're not finding anything connecting the graffiti and this kidnapping. But we're lumping this stuff all together.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing.
And because of these effects and all this stuff happening in the media, eventually what we see is that the satanic scare, the satanic panic, eventually is stripped of its mythological and occult information, and becomes just a generalized kidnapping scare. When I was a kid in the 80s, we were getting ridiculous statistics about how many kids were kidnapped every year and how many of them were murdered. And it led to things like the cops would come to the park and, you know, or a carnival and start fingerprinting children so that they could be tracked if they were kidnapped.
We had cops come to our church and fingerprint the kids and do the whole identification package and have the current photo. Same thing, yeah.
So in case they're the kids that are spray painting the churches, then we know.
Yeah, these fingerprints were more often used to prosecute crimes than they were to track kidnapped children.
Here's a really weird thing is I could see how this could end up jumping and snowballing in with these assumptions. Let's just say you fingerprint one of the kids in the church and he's the one playing this little prank. What if they start going, oh, this person maybe have been kidnapped and let go, and rather than them being part of a prank, it becomes part of this crime, and it's amazing how we're allowing ourselves to make these assumptions, and it isn't like there's an actual crime and there's a cult, because there are cults out there. There are cults that kidnap people. There's things like Heaven's Gate, Charles Manson,
yeah,
Jim Jones, where you have these like death cults.
And there is the thing we have to say is there is the occasional person of reduced mental capacity or suffering from an illness who decides to pick up the Satan mantle in order to commit crimes. I mean, these isolated incidents do exist.
It's a shame we've given them the mantle to pick up.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
It's not like there's this widespread like cells, like they say, oh, Al-Qaeda has these small pockets all over the world and stuff like that. There hasn't been found even one of these pockets, certainly not anything part of an organized, secret, clandestine cabal.
Yeah. And the thing is this kidnapping scare, this idea, the statistics of kidnapping continue to this day. I did a Google search this morning, and I found a website that was selling a book about how your children could be kidnapped, and here's what you could do to prevent them, and here are the statistics on it. And they suggested that 1.5 million children are abducted each year. Child kidnapping victims, 40% of which are killed and 4% are never found. And I thought That would be the Amber Alert system would be running nonstop if that were the case. And
we'd never have any real radio because we'd constantly be interrupting it.
Yeah, and so I checked out. I followed the rabbit hole a little bit, and I went to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And it turns out that the number is really closer to 797,000 are reported missing. And 203,000 of these are victims of family abductions, which is usually the result of a custody battle, and somebody decides the custody battle doesn't go their way. 58,000 of these are actually non-family abductions, and 115 children were the victims of stereotypical kidnapping, which is the kind of kidnapping that you see in the media.
It's kind of funny because
so instead of 1.5 million, it's 115.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. Interestingly, that number leaves 535,000 who are missing for reasons other than kidnapping. This is runaways, throwaways, merely lost children, injured children. And the vast majority of this number were missing for some benign reason, like they were just at the park and decided not to go home. And these numbers seem almost completely cooked or completely fabricated. But you look at the studies, this 40% number exists. It's an accurate number. However, it's applied to the wrong statistic. 40% of the stereotypical kidnapping cases are killed. So what we're looking is
40% of 115.
Yeah. On one side, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is saying 40 people. And then this book, who is trying to help you save your children from kidnapping, is suggesting 600,000 children a year are killed by abductors.
And specific abductors, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
ones that you need to protect your kids from.
And all this goes back to somebody wanting to do the ex-Satanist thing, a group of people wanting to do the ex-Satanist thing at a church. Here's the harm.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of the weird fears that came out of, you know, poison or razor blades in a candy apple.
Yeah.
That there's only been one case ever confirmed.
The Candy Man.
There's only been one confirmed case of a child dying from poisoned candy, and it was something given to them by a relative.
It was the father. It was the Candy Man. He was recently executed in Texas.
It's never this widespread, you know, evil lurking stranger that a lot of times, like you said, with kidnappings, it's, and even with murders, it's somebody that you know.
Yeah.
It's never some secret conspiracy.
And this continues to this day. And like I said, this is the first of a series called Where's the Harm? I think we've shown you the harm. If you're not certain whether or not we're believable, don't believe us. All this stuff is online. Avoid sources like Wikipedia. I can tell you, I tried to look up information about repressed memories on Wikipedia, and there's a neutral point of view war. And so the article is actually practically zero content. And but this continues to this day. Just last month, there was a I lost the actual information, but I'll tell you guys what was going on. Is that there was a murder in 1985, and a person was incarcerated and put on death row for it. He was later cleared by DNA evidence, and so they were looking for who killed this person in 1985. And America's Most Wanted reported just last month that it was a ritualistic satanic cult.
Oh, are we still onto this stuff?
It's 2011, and people are still talking about this. There's the harm.
There's the harm.
Yeah.
So, if you'd like to meet up with us after the show, we are, as we do every time, we meet up, and this time we're going to be at Dorky's Arcade again, just like we will on Saturday, May 21st. We'll be there at 5, and unlike most of our venues, this is actually an all-ages place. It's got games, it's got food, it's got root beer on tap. Come on out and join us.
Yeah, I think this is it's going to be a lot of fun. This is actually, like you said, an all-ages establishment. There's some great video games there. There's stuff that I played the Star Wars arcade game. Mm. I haven't played that since I was like 5. The fact that these things still exist makes me very happy.
And asking the question, where's the harm? A victim we haven't really mentioned here is all of those people who think they're demon possessed.
Yeah.
And come crawling up to their preacher wanting to be, you know, by perpetuating the myth, people who are susceptible to that become victims to that. And it's kind of a situation that's strange because, yeah, I understand the fact that they got to be a little off to manifest that, but at the same time, if you weren't putting out stuff like this, they wouldn't be.
Yeah, and I think we had mentioned this before, too. Why is it that people are seeing the same sort of thing? Like you said, everyone acts the way they expect to act because they saw this person act this way while they were purged from demons in The Exorcist or in other things, and they've been told how it looks. It reminds me a lot of the alien abduction stuff where Remember, for the longest time, aliens, whenever they abducted somebody with these same sorts of experiences, whether they were abducted by demons or whatnot, the aliens looked completely different from case to case. But once we had this sort of cultural norm for what an alien looked like, football-shaped eyes, everybody suddenly saw it.
Yeah.
That you have this tendency, like with a near-death experience, you see what you expect to see.
In the 1940s and 50s, there were myriad styles of aliens. You know, green aliens, blue aliens, tall aliens, short aliens. And then the Communion book happened with its art, and the gray aliens basically took form. And all of a sudden, statistically, gray alien sightings increased by orders of magnitude, and other alien sightings decreased about the same rate.
Absolutely. Again, you see what you expect to see. If you're a Catholic and you have a near-death experience, guess what? It matches up. If you're a Hindu and near-death experience, same thing.
Clearly, we have just scratched the surface of this topic. If you're interested in this and want to see where it goes and see where the harm is, check it out. I recently watched the Geraldo special on Satanism, which was comedic in nature, given our you know, view from the future.
Geraldo's always a good source for hardline journalism.
So that's all we've got for today. I want to thank you, Mike.
Hey, no problem.
Thank you, Rich.
You bet.
Always great working with you guys. So my name is Sam Mulvey. Our call screener for today was Becky Friedman. Ask an Atheist is a production of NEDM Media. And
you can catch us online at askanatheist.tv.
And you can leave us an email, and you can give us a voicemail if you'd like to call us, but you don't listen to the show live, and you'd like your show, you'd like your voice on the show. You can give us a call at 206-420-0997. Thank you, guys. We'll catch you later.
Keeping you informed, this is KLAY, Lakewood, Tacoma. Your converse.